and welcome to the ADHD Manual Podcast. My name is Abby Miner. I'm a marriage and family therapist, an ADHD certified clinical services provider, and a proud ADHDer. This is a podcast for people with attention deficit hyperactivity disorder and those who love us, which covers pretty much everybody. Growing up with a colorful brain in a black and white world can make us feel like aliens. The manual we've been given to guide us through life doesn't have any diagrams of the parts we've been given. I've decided to stop throwing away my parts and start throwing away this useless manual to write my own. So kick off your shoes, have a seat, and take a break from fitting yourself into a mold that's not your shape. You belong here. Allies, welcome to the ADHD planet. ADHDers, welcome home. Hello, hello, and welcome to another episode of the ADHD Manual Podcast. I am Abby. Welcome to November. Pretty exciting month. ADHD Awareness Month is over, but here at the ADHD Manual Podcast, it's always October. So let's hop right in. So today I thought it might be helpful to answer a question I got the other day from a middle school teacher about one of his students who has ADHD and the kind of issues that he's seeing in the classroom and maybe some suggestions on how to handle it from a teacher's perspective. So I thought that might be kind of fun to address, and maybe we can start talking about ADHD in school. I know that it's a big topic, so obviously we won't solve all the problems today. But I thought today's as good a day as any to open that conversation. And I also wanted to say that my inbox is always open. And my absolute favorite thing to do is to just talk to people about what's going on with them. Obviously, that's kind of why I'm a therapist. But I found that one of the most powerful tools in helping others, and especially when it comes to ADHD, is talking about specific stories. I think that ADHD can look so, so different across all of us. I mean, the diversity is incredible. And I think there's so much value in talking to people about their specific stories, what's going on with them, what in particular is coming up for you, asking them questions about what is most important to them at this point in time. So if you have a question or a story, you want to ask a specific question about what's going on, or you found something that really didn't work or really did work and you want to share it, I definitely want to open that up. And I want to send out a particular invitation to teachers, and other professionals, like helping professionals, teaching professionals. I know that in a lot of ways, you are kind of in the forefront of ADHD, right? I mean, a huge focus of ADHD attention, pun unintended, and the research is really centered around school. So I think that teachers have a special perspective to offer here. So I would like to offer out a call for teachers to send in your stories. If you could obviously try to minimize the identifying details or if it's about particular students, but I would love to hear where you're getting stuck and where you would like guidance and what you found to be helpful, because I think in a lot of ways, you're the person a child spends the most time with. And so I think that your input's really valuable. So my email is theadhdmanual@gmail.com. I also put it in the show notes of every episode. If you want to send me an email, or you can also feel free to send me maybe a voice message, if it's easier to talk it out and say what's going on. So feel free to send that as a file to the email, or there might be a way to record things maybe in a Facebook message or Twitter message. I'm not sure about the the socials and those details, but any kind of format that you would like to send in some feedback, I want to hear it. Okay, so the message that I got from this teacher, he lists some of the challenges that he's seen or experienced with this student in the classroom. So one is he tends to disrupt other students, often roughhousing or talking during work time. Even when offered rewards, he's often unable to be productive for even short periods of time. I let him listen to music with headphones while working on independent work, but sometimes he turns the volume up high and rocks out with head jerking and air guitar such that he distracts other students. He's often argumentative and sometimes refuses to work on things he doesn't feel interested in. So I thought I would maybe tackle this by topic and maybe identify some central themes, how they relate to ADHD, and a couple things that are a little bit more classroom specific that might be helpful, a helpful place to start or look into. So the first issue that I heard is engaging in schoolwork is a challenge, and the promise of rewards doesn't work. So obviously anyone even with a minimal understanding of ADHD will kind of see this a lot, right, and be able to recognize this. So not being able to engage in schoolwork or not being interested in subjects is not really ADHD specific, right? That's something you see in all kinds of kids, and every student can't be totally enraptured with every subject all the time. It happens. And I don't want to sit here and tell teachers about how to make their lessons more engaging with students. You're already doing that. That's your whole thing. And I'm sure that you have really excellent and creative ways of tackling that. So what I want to focus on instead is what is ADHD specific in this, which is the rewards and consequences structure not working as effectively as it would a neurotypical student. So what's really coming into play here is the interest-based nervous system, right? So this is something that I covered in the episode Why People Have Called You Lazy. I believe that was the third one. So there's definitely more on this that you can go back and listen to, and there's also a ton on my website under this topic. But basically, to sum up, the typical get a reward if you do something, get a consequence if you don't do it, that whole structure doesn't really work as well with ADHD kids. And the reason for that is that our nervous system really requires certain triggers to engage and enact motivation and controlled focus or sustained attention. And those four triggers that we need to activate our motivation are urgency, competition and challenge, novelty and interest. So this is a bit of a review, but just to reiterate, the reason that people with ADHD need these four triggers to really engage with their motivation and sustained attention is because of our lack of dopamine in our brains. So dopamine is the neurotransmitter that runs our reward system, right? And thus our motivation system. So basically, dopamine rewards us for behavior and makes us want to do the behavior in order to get the dopamine boost. So for neurotypical people, their dopamine levels are stable and high enough so that just the anticipation of getting a reward after doing something, that's enough to get them going. That's enough to release a little dopamine for them to kind of kick in gear and be like, okay, I'm going to do this. I'm going to get this out of the way and then I can get my reward. For people with ADHD, that anticipation isn't enough. Our low dopamine is already too low to even enact any kind of start button, right? And this is why you might see your ADHD kid kind of responding not as well to rewards and consequences or needing much, much bigger rewards or bigger consequences to really be effective, right? It's because we need more of a lift to even get up to baseline and to be able to engage the brain functions that other people are able to do easily because they're at the baseline already. So what I like to recommend for this is trying to do something that would raise the dopamine levels a little bit in order to engage in the task, you know, motivate and get that essentially like a pre-task reward, even though that's not really what this is, right? It's not a reward for doing something good. It's a necessity. It's a necessity to make your brain work the way you want it to in the moment. So some ideas or suggestions of things that can raise dopamine, especially like in a pinch or like maybe more quickly, you know, besides medication, obviously, because sometimes people are on medication already and they still need this kind of boost, or medication is not an option or whatever. It's still not, you know, an immediate thing. So some foods that could raise dopamine. I mean, obviously, sugar, it will raise dopamine. And to be honest with you, like, I do use that in a pinch. If I am feeling really low and I just don't have enough to get going, I will, like, have a Reese's. I had a Reese's before I started recording this. So it'll work in a pinch, but obviously it's not a very sustainable source of energy and dopamine. So some foods that have more of a sustained level dopamine release is protein. Protein is especially important in the ADHD diet, because of its role in stabilizing dopamine and creating, like, you know, that kind of sustained energy that we have trouble doing on our own, right? We have trouble sustaining our energy over a long period of time. So some foods that might help with that, obviously meat, any kind of like eggs, dairy, peanut butter, nuts are really good because they've got some other kind of vitamins and fat and stuff in there. Fish is especially really, really important for a person with ADHD, because it not only raises that protein, but it also has omega-3 fatty acid, fatty oil? I don't know. And that can be really helpful in boosting memory and concentration. So a lot of times you'll find doctors recommending an omega-3 supplement for somebody with ADHD because it helps with that. Caffeine is something that will raise dopamine, but sometimes that might be not a really reasonable solution. You know, if it's a kid, you know, caffeine might not be a great option. It also has, you know, some of the other unpleasant side effects of caffeine, but it's an option. Music is a big one that releases dopamine. Doing anything that you enjoy, like, you know, reading a chapter of a book you like, watching an episode of a TV show you like. Maybe you really enjoy art or coloring and you want to take like 5 minutes to do coloring before you have to do something productive. Social contact is another thing that's really helpful for boosting that dopamine, which I think we are all really suffering from a lack of right now, that inability to be close to other people. Also, a side note I want to say is that we are all living through such a hard time right now. We're going through a trauma. We have this constant threat of our, you know, either individual, our family safety, even just collective community safety is being threatened right now. So basically what I've been telling everyone is lower the bar. Lower the bar for yourself right now, and for others. I mean, no one is going to be at their most productive right now. We're in the middle of a pandemic. You know, the U.S. is especially suffering with this virus. So I personally don't think we can give ourselves enough breaks for the time being. I think we all need them. So that's just something to keep in mind. Like, all of these are suggestions, and if they work, they work. And if not, I think we all just need to be especially patient and gentle with ourselves and with others. It's completely expected to feel like normal is using all your energy right now where we are, you know? So I think that's especially important to keep in mind for those of us who are, you know, neurodivergent, who have ADHD or autism or who have other things going on. I think for those people especially where we already struggle, it already takes a lot of our energy to get to quote-unquote normal, right? To get to the baseline, to get to that standard by which everyone is judged. So in this time when everyone is having to work harder to get up to baseline and to get up to survival, it's important to remember that survival looks different to everybody. And I think we need to just honor what we're having to do to get by, get through this time. So anyway, that's a side note of just, you know, it's great. I mean, teachers, I know nothing I'm going to say to you is going to make you stop, you know, trying different things with your students and advocating for them and getting creative with them and really trying to help them. Like, nothing I say was going to make you stop that, because that's what you're amazing. That's why you're amazing at your job. I just think that you should remember that, you know, you're doing a great job, even if what's coming out isn't what you expected or the level of performance that you're used to. Anyway, so those are some quick things to boost dopamine, but probably the biggest one for ADHD and one of the only pretty universally accepted treatments for ADHD that aren't medication is exercise and movement. That has been shown to have an enormous impact on people with ADHD. And I don't know if you're like me, but when I hear exercise, I flip out a little bit. I think we have a lot of connections with that word or associations with it that don't really make us want to do it, more or less, right? We have this image of what exercise is supposed to look like, you know, like a certain amount of cardio and strength building. And I clearly don't exercise much because I can't think of any others. But I think we need to really broaden that definition of exercise into also including like all different kinds of movement, you know, like maybe playing a song you like and just dancing really wild is a form of like exercise or movement, you know, that counts. I mean, it still gets your dopamine up. It's still moving your body. It's still activating those kinds of things that are going to really help you. So I recommend it before you have to do something really productive. Try to move your body in whatever way that you feel comfortable. That can be a workout. That can be, you know, stretching. Could be yoga or a walk, maybe, you know. So I definitely think that's probably the most effective thing I could recommend for getting that initial dopamine boost to initiate tasks. Something else about rewards and consequences is that for students with ADHD in particular, the reward and the consequence has to be more immediate after the targeted behavior. So you might find that saying, I'm going to go take you out for ice cream tonight if you get up for school ready in the morning. You might find that that's not as useful because the reward is too far away from the desired behavior. So for those of us with ADHD who have difficulties with that working memory and that time blindness, right, it can be really important to make sure that there isn't too much weight between, you know, the action and the result. So If a student does something well, then having something that they can do immediately after could also help to motivate that action, right? Or reinforce that action. So the next theme that I saw was disrupting classmates, right? You know, like suddenly turning up the music and rocking out and dancing, you know, maybe arguing with teachers or classmates. I mean, those are all ways that can be especially challenging, right? Because you want to help this one student, but it can't be at the expense of the other students that you have, right? So first, you know, this is totally speculation, right? It's a very small snippet into this student's life. I don't really know. But some speculation I might put forth as a reason for this kind of what seems to me maybe kind of sudden behavior, you know, like kind of all of a sudden turning up the music or, you know, suddenly getting really argumentative. And so a lot of those times I think it could be related to a few different things. For one, I think it's also related to dopamine. If you're feeling, if we feel that really low dopamine, like not enough, you know, really lacking, our bodies will do what they need to try to get that back up. And a lot of times, sometimes it's not very, you know, helpful maybe, or like sustainable, but our body's always looking out for us. And so if our body is like, oh, I need some dopamine right now, it might result in some behaviors that could be pretty distracting to other classmates, right? Especially when mixed with that impulsivity and that reduced ability to inhibit our behavior, right? So it sounds silly, but conflict actually does increase your dopamine, right? It kind of gets your adrenaline up and increases your dopamine. And sometimes you'll see this a lot with kids and with adults, that people with ADHD really tend to pick fights if they're feeling understimulated, right? If they don't have enough dopamine. So that might be one reason. So maybe having some other activities or foods or things that can offer that kind of dopamine boost could maybe help that as well. Another thing I'm wondering that makes me curious when hearing about this is some of those sensory needs, right? A lot of people with ADHD, especially kids who are still learning about their environment and learning to, you know, tune into their own body signals and what they mean, this could come up quite a bit, you know. And we talked a little bit about this in Why You Feel So Much, right? That's my episode, I mean. That's the fourth episode. So there's more on that there about that kind of hypersensitivity and how the emotional hyperarousal can translate into being especially sensitive to sensory stimuli in your environment. Like a lot of people with ADHD and autism as well will have some, you know, textures, sounds, smells, etc. that they're particularly sensitive to. And so, that can sometimes translate into being overstimulated, right? Like when it's a certain, for me, it's not really the volume of sounds, even though that's sometimes what it comes out of my mouth. Like I'll say like, oh, it's too loud, but that's not what I mean. I mean, like there's a lot of like conflicting sounds coming at me. So sometimes that can be a real trigger. So that's overstimulated, but something that is related, but the flip side of that same coin is being understimulated, right? So those times, or maybe you're someone that always needs to be doing multiple things at once, you know, I'll get into these modes where like, I can't just sit and watch a television show. I'll have to also be playing a game on my phone, or also be coloring. So I think I am very curious if those are moments where he's feeling understimulated. And so if that is the case, then some suggestions that might be helpful are some fidgets, right? I know I've talked to some teachers who have maybe some mixed feelings about fidgets, you know, in the classroom because of maybe their capacity to distract the student that they're supposed to be helping, as well as distract other students, right? So I just want to review what a good fidget does. And by fidget, I mean like a gadget, some sort of material or thing that you're engaging with in order to improve your focus, right? So what makes a good fidget is something that uses a sense that's secondary to the sense that requires your main attention. So for example, like if you are listening to a lecture, you can't also be listening to music. That's using the same sense. So a good fidget for that might be something, you know, that's handheld, you know, drawing, coloring, doodling is something that like a ton of people do even without thinking about it, right? Because it does help focus because it uses a secondary sense. I think maybe there might be some fidgets out there that maybe because of how they're designed, or maybe it's just the particular person using them, they become more of like a toy. So it's important that the fidget can't take too much of your attention. You have to be able to do it without really thinking about it. So it's just something to be aware of. And I want to like, you know, reassure teachers that if you're finding that like, oh, well, one of my students has this fidget and I don't feel like I can take it away from them. But they seem to be really like captured by it and have trouble listening when they're using it. That's really reasonable to point out, you know, and maybe point out like, hey, this seems to be taking maybe a lot of your attention. I wonder if we maybe need to find something else that actually helps your focus instead of takes your focus away from what you're trying to do. So just want to reassure that that's a totally okay observation to make and, you know, boundary to set that if it's distracting, then that needs to be changed. Something else that I'm curious about in when thinking about, you know, arguing with teachers or talking back, being kind of defiant, is RSD, right? Rejection sensitive dysphoria. And I think one thing that maybe we tend to overlook in students and their accommodations, like 504 or IEP, at least when it comes to ADHD, I often find that maybe there's a perception of ADHD as more of like an academic disability almost, like that kind of like classroom behavior, learning, paying attention, that kind of thing. And then they often put like emotional, you know, disturbances or emotional behavioral accommodations into a whole separate category when, you know, really those things are very much connected. So, you know, as we talked about before in the episode, Why Your Breakups Feel Like Death, right? The fifth episode, I think I did, is sometimes people react to rejection with retaliating, right? Feeling angry, like outbursts, defensiveness. And a lot of times you might see that, especially in kids with ADHD. And so I wonder if that might be relevant to that kind of argumentative behavior that might be disruptive. So if that were the case, if that's worth exploring, then one thing I have seen helpful in students' accommodations is coming up with a way to essentially call a student out or correct their behavior in the moment without putting them on the spot or embarrassing them in front of their peers. So for example, like I had a client who had an accommodation that if he was getting distracted, a teacher would just walk by and tap his desk, you know, and that was a signal that he knew meant, hey, pay attention, you know, just calling you back in. So if I wonder if that would be helpful to kind of come up with something like that, to maybe accomplish the goal of correcting the behavior. Cause, that's important, right? It's important to do that in the moment. It's important to call attention in the moment, especially for all kids, but kids with ADHD especially. So maybe that might be worth something exploring, coming up with a signal to accomplish a goal of correcting behavior without maybe activating that really sharp rejection, retaliation response. While I'm thinking about accommodations, I also wanted to maybe take a second to point out the difference between a 504 plan and an IEP. For those who are maybe not familiar with the distinction, teachers, I think you probably are, but for those who don't know, an IEP stands for Individualized Education Plan, right? And that is a form of special education that more so addresses changing the actual education to fit a student's disability and to be catered towards their abilities. So it basically changes the curriculum in a sense, like it might reduce the, you know, the amount of work, it might add a class or, you know, substitute a class because of a student's disability, things like that. Whereas a 504 plan is more geared towards environment accommodations that can allow a student to keep up with the already established curriculum. So that might look like in-classroom accommodations of, you know, a certain chair or seating arrangements. Those are often on a 504 plan. Breaking an assignment into manageable chunks at a time. So those are things that you can take the same material and adjust it to fit a student's disability, whereas an IEP kind of adjusts the material itself. Lastly, I just want to say when it comes to maybe trying to limit those moments of argumentative behavior or kind of reacting negatively when being asked to do something a student doesn't want to do. Something that might help is to first keep in mind that because of the executive function deficits that are involved with ADHD, you know, that working memory, holding information in your brain while you're using it or while you're manipulating it, those tasks are especially difficult for those of us with ADHD. And so what would really might help in the classroom is making sure, especially for these kinds of students, to keep instructions clear and very brief and try to have some sort of reference material for the student to refer back to. So like saying an instruction, saying only a little bit at a time, and then also writing it on the board or some sort of visual reminder. Something I see a lot with kids with ADHD is that when, you know, let's be real, and adults with ADHD too, with me as well, when we get a lot of information at once, we might shut down or start to act out because it feels so impossible for us, right? Because it's a lot more work for us to maybe hear a set of instructions and then follow them. Whereas for a neurotypical student, they might not have to work as hard to do that. So for like a classroom of neurotypical kids, you might be able to say, okay, pull out your book, your math book, flip to this page, and then do these problems. And then when you're done, just sit there quietly or read a book, right? Those might be totally easy to follow for a neurotypical student, but it might be very overwhelming to a kid with ADHD or any kind of neurodivergence. So something that might help is breaking that into chunks. You know, take out your math book. Okay, great. You know, now flip to this page. Awesome. Now do these problems that I'm going to write on the board. So a lot of teachers, you might do this already because I think it'll help a lot of kids anyway, especially younger kids. But it's just important to remember that as especially helpful. Or another idea is maybe if the class is doing some independent work and you want them to do a certain number of problems, like, you know, 1 to 10 or something. If you're finding that a student kind of has trouble starting those or tends to get really disruptive when it comes to delivering instructions for those kind of assignments, I wonder if it might help to say, like, okay, tell that student, do the first 5 and then, like, you know, take a break to, I don't know, draw a picture, listen to music if that's what you allow in your classroom, and then do, and then just, like, check in with them after that, and then you can say, you know, do 5 more. So sometimes breaking it up into those chunks and kind of intervening at the point of performance is a big thing, you know, when it comes to ADHD accommodations especially. So that's what I've got for today. Thank you all so much for listening. Again, please send me your questions, your cases, your problems, comments, or stories. I really love to engage with people in that way. So if you are a teacher, maybe, if you have a student with ADHD that you would like some guidance on, or if you have students with ADHD that you found things that really work, I think we'd all love to really hear that. So again, my email is theadhdmanual@gmail.com. And feel free to send me an email or a voice message along with what you're comfortable with me playing or reading in an episode. So I'll see you again in 2 weeks, and everybody take care. That's all for this episode, but there is plenty more at my website, theadhdmanual.com. That's theadhdmanual.com. You can find me on Facebook, Twitter, and Reddit at theadhdmanual. Do you have a question, comment, or story? Then I want to hear it. Email me at theadhdmanual@gmail.com. Very special thank you to my brother, Joe Miner, for composing this theme music, and thank you so much for listening. And remember to be kind to yourself. See you next time.